You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. Today's podcast is episode 35, and it's The Path to Self-Sufficiency, Part 2. Yesterday's podcast, episode 34, Monica and I started discussing this idea of the path to self-sufficiency. We talked about the spectrum of self-sufficiency and how it really ranges from being that total consumer on the conveyor belt of corporatism all the way to off-grid living, which is basically you deny the modern conveniences that even an off-grid person would use. And then everything in between. And that's where we fall, is somewhere in between. We like to be to the right of that spectrum. And we discussed that in these two episodes. So if you did not listen to episode 34, please go back and do that if you're interested in this sort of thing. And we talk about some milestones. Today we pick it up and continue talking about that path with finishing up on some of the ideas of getting rid of cable TV due to the time and the money and basically just removing yourself from that corporate conveyor belt. And we kind of move into talking about being debt-free and some other very practical steps you can take to start gaining ground in the path to self-sufficiency. Yeah. Many years ago, we said, okay, we got to get rid of the cable for many reasons. Mm-hmm. But part of it, you know, the time thief thing, it's the money thing, it's the influence thing.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of reasons to do it.
And we do have Netflix, but the amount that we spend watching that, it's probably just a few hours a month. I mean, we don't even watch it every week. We just don't.
Yeah, the kids watched a movie the other night, probably the first time they watched a movie in, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. We just don't watch it that much. And it really doesn't, our life isn't any worse off for it.
No, and they've gotten to the point where they're not missing it because, well, they're busy doing other things, but you know, there's just other things going on. And once you have broken away from the conveyor belt, then it's not that hard to not be on the conveyor belt.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know, but we know it is hard at first.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why we put that milestone so high. I mean, there's many different things you could do. There's little baby steps here and there that can be done on this path to self-sufficiency, not just changing your mind and figuring out what your values are. I think sitting down together and talking about those things and trying to determine where you want to be is important.
Well, yeah.
So, because where do you want to be on that spectrum?
Right, because I don't want to be on the off grid. I don't want to go that far.
Right.
But eventually being either close to off-grid or being off-grid, I think would be great, and could, you know, make a goal like, okay, we're going to practice doing these things, or we're going to get better and better at these skills so that we can survive.
Right.
Should we lose electricity one day?
Sure. And we obviously want the ability that we could thrive if we had to live without electricity for whatever reason.
Right.
That we could do that, and it wouldn't be this giant shock to the system.
Right.
So besides that, there's some other practical things that people can do, you know, besides the dropping of the cable and most people are probably going to reduce this over time.
Yeah.
If their kids are doing 5 hours of video games and TV a night, maybe you go to 4 hours for a month, and then 3 hours, and then 2 hours, and then 1 hour, and then maybe 3 hours a week or something like that.
And probably one of the best things you can do if your children have televisions in their bedroom is that should be your first step, is to take it out.
Yeah.
Get rid of the televisions in the bedroom. They shouldn't have to be watching shows or whatever to go to sleep.
Right. Okay, so that's an important milestone. How about the act of growing your own food as a milestone, no matter the size? I mean, just the, you know, we could get into percentages and all that, but the gaining of the skill and just a little bit of growing your own food, whether it's you're in an apartment and you're doing container gardening.
Yeah.
To, hey, I've got a quarter acre. Let me see how much food I can produce.
Yeah.
To the person who's obviously got lots of land and is growing majority,
well,
if not more.
I think that's
more.
Really important because, you know, if you can start growing your own food, you're pulling out a little bit from having to go to the grocery store all the time, even if it's just a small amount,
right.
Even if all you get is a few summer produce.
Yeah.
You know, you've backed away slightly.
That's right. So again, on this spectrum of self-sufficiency, the person who's growing a little bit of their own food is a little bit more self-sufficient than the person who's not. And again, it's not a competition, you know, between you and the guy next to you. It's a competition between you and what you your goal is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how long does it take you to achieve that, and how fast do you want to get there? And so, yeah, growing a little bit of your own food, and then not stopping there. You know, growing your own food, and can you have some animals?
Yeah.
You know, this is such a travesty that anybody should be able to have a few chickens if they want a few chickens.
Yeah, but that's not the case.
It's not the case. Now, yeah. Some cities are getting better, and they're allowing, you know, a certain amount of hens.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in an area where you can't have a few chickens, then you should be protesting and figuring out why.
Yeah.
Why are they trying to make you dependent on the system?
Well, there's a possibility that you've bought a home where there's like a homeowners association that has certain rules and bylaws, and you know, when you bought that home, you agreed to that, and so it may be something you want to consider moving. You know,
yes.
Selling your home and saying, you know what, this is worth it to me because I value it.
That's right.
It's important. You know, can I go back to the growing of your food really
sure.
quick? One of the skills that I plan on learning and I think is important for everybody is preserving your own seeds so that you're not dependent on purchasing seeds at a store. Because what if that's not available anymore?
Right.
And what if you can't get heirloom seeds eventually? I mean, geez, the GMO conglomerates would like to get rid of that completely.
Right.
So for that to be controlled or alleviated completely. Yeah. And I would like to know that what we grow, I can reproduce the following year because I learned how to preserve those seeds.
Yeah, that's a great skill. That's a good point. It kind of bleeds over into, you know, just growing your own food, but then developing skills. For self-sufficiency, developing skills is really important.
Well, yeah, and even container gardening. That's something that you can practice on a small scale.
Yeah.
You don't have to have, you know, a gigantic garden and you're trying to preserve 50 different varieties.
Right. We practice container gardening in Okinawa, and it probably didn't even provide
not very much,
a couple percent, you know, of our food, but it was more for the beginning of the skill.
Right. And if I had pushed it a little further, then I could have learned to preserve my seeds, and we could have used those the following year.
Right. Instead of just buying the packets.
Precisely.
Right. Now, there's nothing wrong with buying the packets, but again, that's a little bit farther to the left on the scale of
yeah.
self-sufficiency.
Right. You still have to depend on the store in
right.
order to provide your food.
It's the same thing with if you're going to grow. A lot of people, say, for example, grow meat chickens. And they buy the pullets every year
mm-hmm.
Online or whatever. And it's great that we have the technology to do that. But they'll buy, say, 50 pullets a year and then raise those meat chickens and then process them.
Right.
Well, they're now dependent upon doing that same thing the next year.
Right. Instead of having a few broody hens that can actually...
Right. Or maybe your own incubator or...
Yeah.
Or even if really self-sufficient, the broody hens that are taking
yeah.
care of their own chickens.
Yeah, you're keeping some of those eggs and letting them...
Right. So, again, it's a spectrum. We have the growing of your own food, and we have the...
keeping of animals.
Keeping of animals, and then gaining of skills. This is really important. This really gets broad. It's everything from being able to take care of animal husbandry or growing
mm-hmm.
food or seed saving, but even changing your own oil.
Yeah, and wildcrafting.
Yeah. Taking care of your equipment.
Knowing how to can.
Tight, or sharpening knives and sharpening a chainsaw, a blade.
Yeah,
you know.
Mending clothing instead of buying new.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just... field dressing animals. I mean, there's
yeah.
so many skills, in which I've had trial by fire here very recently.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've discovered in our life that's really the best way to learn sometimes.
Yeah.
You just got to do it.
That's right.
You
yeah.
got to do it.
Yep. So those are all great milestones to help on the path to self-sufficiency. What about, let's talk about, because people are so just caught and trapped by debt.
Mm.
I mean, even if they've said, "Hey, I know I'm on the conveyor belt. I want off the conveyor belt. I'm trying to get off the conveyor belt, but I can't."
Right.
I mean, yes, I've stopped buying all this garbage, but I am stuck in the rut. I am in the rat race, and I can't get out because they're so in debt. And there's a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother subject, but it is I think it's a huge step in or milestone
in
towards self-sufficiency.
I would agree, and I think that many people have things that they could sell that would help alleviate some of the burden, you know, whether it's a boat or an RV or maybe some
recreational
quads. Type vehicles, things like that. And I do understand, because we've done this before, mm-hmm. that getting rid of them is hard.
Yep.
Selling them is difficult. However, not only is that additional money helping to pay off some debt, but it's also freeing up some of the money used for maintenance, for gas, and even it's like, well, gee, we have this thing, we've got to use it. So now we've got to go on vacation and we have to, you know, get a cabin, or we got to leave early and we got to hook it up to our truck and we have to use all of that gas to take us out to the lake to spend all day so we can fish to use our boat.
Right.
You know, and, right. and many people, because they're spending so much money to support those things, don't have time anymore to use the
to
things
use them.
That yeah. they're paying for.
Right.
It's a vicious cycle. And so for us, it was important. We said, okay, we have all of these things. Let's sell them. We need to get out of debt. That is of paramount importance
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. And we this was an entire path of its own, but we went through Financial Peace University, which we would recommend
yeah.
to anyone trying to get out of debt to do that. And then develop gazelle-like intensity, which you'll learn about if you go into yeah. the course. And, you know, sadly, most people that go through Financial Peace University don't actually take it seriously.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's hard.
It is hard.
You have to be willing to work hard, and you have to be willing to sacrifice.
Right.
To say, okay, yes, this is important to me, just like determining your values, and then not let anything stop you. Even
right.
yourself, right, as you're moving along going, oh, but I really like those weekly dinners out or whatever.
Right.
No, you don't have time for that right now. Right now, your eye is on the prize, and that prize is getting out of debt. Nothing else should be more important than
right.
that. And if you go at it that way, which is what we did when we went through that, we were out of debt very quickly, even though I think we had the most debt of anyone in our
probably. I don't remember
course.
Exactly.
We
had a lot of debt.
We had a lot of debt.
But we got out of it quickly because we had gazelle-like intensity. We sold things left and right. We figured out ways to make more money. We stopped the bleeding.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just worked extremely hard.
We did. We really did. And you know what? It felt great. When we actually got out of debt, it was, I wanted to yell, freedom!
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It felt
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, and I tell you, that was a huge step. And I mean, we moved our rung to the right on that spectrum of self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
I mean, that was huge.
Yeah.
Because it gave us more options.
Yes.
It gave us the ability to ultimately to do what we're doing now, because we had the options.
Right. Because we didn't have that debt that we every single month we had to
right.
worry about taking whatever small resources we had and giving it to somebody else.
Yeah, that's right. So if you are, again, looking to move to the right in as far as self-sufficiency, debt is definitely one thing that you can work on
yeah.
and eliminate. There is no good debt. Don't let people lie to you. They will tell you that all the time. There's good debt. There's bad debt. No, it's all bad. Okay, I think that. I think in very limited circumstances, you can use debt, but there's almost no reason to do it.
Correct.
Besides maybe buying a mortgage. Well,
right.
that's all.
That's what we have for
yeah.
mortgage.
And then other people, you know, will use it in other limited circumstances. That's fine. I just don't think so.
Right.
A mortgage is it. And I, quite honestly, one of our main goals is to get that mortgage paid off as soon as possible.
Yes.
To have nothing.
Yeah, no that doubt. Would be wonderful.
Yeah. So we have skills that they can develop. They can work on being debt-free. They can get rid of the TV, really, or the electronics,
yeah,
or cable. Not only does that save you money, it saves you time, and saves your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and oh my word, think about all the things you could learn and do with all that extra 34 hours a week,
right,
for goodness sake.
Right. Even if you dedicated an extra 5 hours a week to some skill,
yeah,
how much you could learn. If you do anything 5 hours a week, you could get pretty good at it.
Yeah. But that's an hour a day, like Monday through Friday, and then take the weekends off. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can really gain some skills doing that.
Yeah.
Now, so what other things do you think people can do to help move them to the right on this self-sufficiency spectrum?
Well, how about taking your health and your family's health into your own hands?
That's a very good one.
You know, instead of living at the doctor or relying on prescription medications, things like that, that you realize, first of all, that diet has a huge impact on your health.
Right.
Huge. If you're still on the SAD diet, the
standard American diet.
Yeah, standard American diet, then there's a problem. You're likely experiencing a lot of health issues, a decreased immunity, possibly stomach ailments, which a lot of people have, including
wheat intolerances and
all these allergy problems that we just haven't had, you know, in the past. Then you probably want to start looking at how to make small changes in your family's diet, and eventually, you know, this is something I encourage people to do. Start out making little changes, and within a year, you'll look back and wonder how you were eating that way.
Yeah.
You know, just getting rid of processed foods.
Right.
Going to a more natural thing. Learning to cook from scratch.
Yeah. And you said do it slowly over time, and that's important because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very difficult area.
Well,
although
it is.
It's another area that's huge on moving people to the right on that spectrum.
Well, right, because it doesn't matter how much food you can grow for yourself. If you're not going to eat it, it's just going to go to waste.
Right.
Your children need to learn to like vegetables because that's primarily what you're going to grow. You're going to be growing a bunch of vegetables.
Yeah, whether they're annual or perennial.
Yeah, vegetables.
Fruits, nuts.
Fruits and, you know.
And meats.
Right. Being more toward a very basic, natural type of diet rather than these highly processed with a lot of high fructose corn syrup, which is extremely sweet, and a lot of salt. So we're very trained.
Our palate has been
distorted.
Distorted, that's a good word.
Yeah, I mean, we really have, it's like if it doesn't have this massive taste, we just don't like it.
Right.
And, you know, it's natural food isn't bland, but it's not enhanced like that. And so we kind of go, well, this doesn't taste as good. But if you get rid of the processed foods, pretty soon you start appreciating the natural tastes of the vegetables and fruits, and that the sweetness and the goodness comes out.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is difficult. It's not an easy transition. I think back on, I used to drink
Diet Coke.
I'd have probably two or three Diet Cokes every single day.
Ugh.
And I look back, now I don't have any Diet Coke. I don't have any soda at all, except for maybe very rarely in a very extreme moment of weakness. Usually at Costco. So that was difficult. But I mean, I don't have an issue with it now. And
right.
I look back and go, wow, why did I ever drink that garbage?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just filled with crap.
Yeah, I know, but that's not what we're thinking about. And I have talked to a lot of mothers, and their children are very picky. It's like, they'll only eat the chicken nuggets from the frozen food section. Or they only eat corn dogs. It's like, well, what are you giving them? You know, you need to expand their palate.
Those children have trained their parents very well.
Yeah, they have. And the thing is, unless you expose children to a lot of food, a different variety of food, they'll never have a larger palate. You just go, well, all they eat is hot dogs, so all I'm going to serve is hot dogs. Little Hero, our little guy, when he first got to us, had a very narrow food experience. And we expanded that food experience, and now I don't know that there's anything that he won't eat.
No, he'll eat anything.
He'll eat anything, and he likes it. There's some things he likes, not as much, or a lot more. But, you know, I have to say this about really anything, kombucha or, okay, beer. You know, when the first time you drink beer, it's not like you like it. You keep drinking it, and after a while, it grows on you, and then pretty soon, right. you like the taste of it.
Right.
Same with wine or any kind of strong tasting foods.
Yeah, like sauerkraut
yeah.
or something like
How
that.
How about spicy foods?
Yeah.
You know, the right. first time you taste it, it might be, woo, this is really spicy, but the more you eat it, the more used to it you get, and then after a while, it doesn't seem like that's that big of a
yeah.
deal.
Now, I have to say, though, that the taste of the food that you grow yourself is so much better.
So much better.
Than what we're buying in the stores, because the bottom line is that, you know, the genetics of the food that are grown and that you find in the stores are designed for look and storability.
Yeah.
They're not designed for nutritional value. Or taste.
Right.
I mean, it's not.
It is a huge difference. When I've tasted tomatoes, matter of fact, had tomatoes from Costco or some store, and then someone had brought us some homegrown tomatoes, just one of our neighbors. And first of all, the color difference was huge. The ones that were grown at home were a little bit funky shaped. Like there was a couple
right.
spots.
Some imperfections. Ah, oh, we can't.
Imperfections. And it wasn't bruising. It was just kind of a funny
right.
texture or whatever on one part of the tomato on the skin. And so it didn't look as pretty. But when we cut it open, the color difference inside was amazing.
Right.
It was so obvious which one was homegrown and which one was from a store. And the one I bought from the store was organic, and it was still on the vine. It's not like I bought, you know, the cheesiest tomatoes in the store. But then we tasted it, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
This tomato is amazing. And the other one was just, eh. You know, it was like adding yeah. a tasteless yeah. thing to
but
your
it
salad.
It was big and it looked good and it
yeah.
stored well.
Yeah. So definitely, if you're going to try to really change your diet successfully, you really should try to at least grow some of your own food.
Yeah.
Because your children will like it better.
Yeah. Now, did we mention... As far as self-sufficiency, like where to live, you know, you think about in the middle of a big city, in the middle of Seattle versus even just living outside of the city and maybe you have a half acre.
Yeah.
Or maybe you live out in boonies and you've got 40 acres. It's harder to be self-sufficient in the middle of the city.
It's much harder.
And like you mentioned before with the HOAS and the LOAS of the Homeowners Association and the Landowners Association.
Yeah.
If possible, you don't want to live under any of those because that's just another added layer of government that's getting in your way.
Yeah. Most likely you will not be able to. I mean, we've read so many articles of people who had a garden and it was literally mowed down by the city because
yeah.
that was.
Or the HOA.
Or the HOA. That's not allowed there. Like,
yeah,
no.
It doesn't look good. That's not the look we're going for.
Right. They want a like golf course. Grass in yeah. the front yard. And then the other thing about health is to work toward trying to do more home remedies
okay.
rather than run to the doctor for every right. sniffle or sickness. So,
yep.
you know, take some time to study some basic things about essential oils. You don't have to be an expert in essential oils. You don't have to be
yeah,
an expert
herbologist.
In herbs. But to have some basics so you know that a particular type of essential oil can help, or a homeopathic
right.
remedy can help with this thing that your child
or
has.
Or the fact that we have Western white pine growing on our property, and we can use those pine needles for tea that helps for many different issues.
Yeah.
How about some of the foods that we're eating right now that have medicinal properties to them? I know there's lots of things that you're working on.
Yeah, that I'm learning all these different things, like fermented foods,
yeah.
like the fermented
yeah.
vegetables. And those help with a lot of stomach issues. If people with IBS have sworn that when they switched over to eating 3 servings of fermented vegetables a day, their IBS went away.
Right. And I tell you what, that's being self-sufficient right there. They don't have to go to the doctor and get pharmaceutical medication and different types of...
oh, yeah, antacids
yeah.
and, you know, it's... stuff to stop their diarrhea.
You're fixing it with food, and was it hard to? Is it hard to make a fermented?
No,
juice?
It's not. And I actually have a podcast about that in one of our Matron and Maidens,
oh, yeah.
just
That's
talking
right.
about how easy it was to make the fermented foods, the vegetables, and they're delicious.
Yeah,
And I've been eating them because I do have lower like acids to break down my food, and so does Hero, and I think Lindy deals with that too. And so I've been eating a little bit before every single meal to increase the digestibility of my food, okay, so I can absorb more of the nutrients that are in it.
Wow, that's interesting, because that reminds me of the Okinawan diet, how they used to serve that. I don't even remember what it was. It was probably had some ginger in it and different things.
Yeah,
that little drink before a meal, like 20 or 30 minutes before a meal.
That was Goya. It was bitter melon with cantaloupe.
But now, wasn't it the same kind of an idea behind it?
It was. It was to start your digestive juices and to increase the digestive juices before you eat.
Right. Yeah. And then they do things like they wouldn't serve water during.
Right, because that decreases.
Decreases.
The enzymes, yeah.
So, yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And then some of the other things you're making, with the raw milk, and you're making yogurt and those kinds of things that have health properties.
Right, the lactobacillus and all of that. And then the other thing that I haven't made on my own yet, but I'd really like to, is silver water.
Okay.
And we keep that as colloidal silver. We keep that on hand. And if somebody starts running a fever or anything like that, I start throwing that in.
Right.
The other thing that I made the other day was elderberry syrup. And that is, again, an immune booster. Okay. And, someone who's either dealing with illness can take it several times a day, or if you're just trying to increase your just all-around immunity, half a teaspoon a day for each of the kids or half tablespoon for adults will increase your vitamin C and your immune system.
Yeah. I've got to say, we've been out here, or you've been out here for...
3 months.
3 months? Is that it?
September, October, November. A little, 3.5.
Okay.
Almost 4.
Okay, so, and with all of us in the house, no one's been sick.
Yeah.
No one's been sick.
I got a little headachey, achy the other day, but that was it.
It was over in less than 24 hours. Minor stuff.
Yeah.
So that's been a blessing.
Yeah. I mean, there's 8 of us living in this house.
Potential to pass that kind of stuff around a lot.
Yeah, and we've been seeing a lot of neighbors, and we've had people over with a lot of children, and we haven't gotten sick.
Very cool. So those kinds of things that you just talked about, developing skills with food to help with the medicinal self-sufficiency in the home. Other skills that we've been learning that help us towards self-sufficiency. Like, for example, I've done some hunting prior to coming out here to Idaho, but not a lot. And specifically no processing of deer, that's for sure. I've hunted small game. And those types of experiences. But that was a huge new learning process for me, and there was a steep learning curve, and I'm literally watching videos and then going out and doing it.
Yeah. Well, and then once you were bringing, the meat into the kitchen, I had watched a video too, so I knew, okay, you're supposed to do a vinegar wash and, a water wash, and then put it into the back. Well, you have to trim all the silver off and the fat off. I mean, I wouldn't have known any of that. Fortunately, we do have YouTube. I could have read it, I suppose, if I didn't. But I'd never done it before.
Yeah, and we're not Luddites, which means that we're not eschewing technology.
So. No, we love technology.
Yeah, absolutely. So use it while you got it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Those types of skills, understanding the forest, being able to identify plants, trees, and different animals in their uses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been huge, even though we've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But we've certainly made a lot of strides in that area. Any other skills that you can think of that we've learned here recently? We've gone through a lot of them. I mean, we've really...
I'm certainly cooking differently. And this is one of the things I'm going to be doing coming up, is just sharing a few of the recipes or the methods that I've been using to prepare the different kinds of foods that I've never fermented vegetables before I came out here. I'd made yogurt, but not like I'm making it now. I'd never, cooked deer. We had venison at Thanksgiving. I'd never cooked that before. How about rabbit?
We just had
roasted rabbit last night. That was really good. Yeah. Even elderberry syrup, different things like that I've never done before.
By the way, we took a couple of snowshoe hares on our property, and we had them last night, and we cooked them up, and it was great.
It was really delicious. So there's a lot of those, a lot of those types of things that, had I not been living in the woods and homesteading, I wouldn't even be experiencing.
No, yeah.
I wouldn't, you know, be like, oh, let's, we're cooking up rabbit tonight that Dad just shot, you know, while he's looking for Christmas a Christmas tree. Which, by the way, we also did that, you know, brought in our, and it wasn't a Christmas tree that you get at the Christmas
tree farm.
Christmas tree. It's not Charlie Brown, no.
It was somewhere in between.
Well, yeah, but, like, we've gotten live trees before, but it's always from a Christmas tree farm.
Right.
I mean, those
or
trees...
a parking lot of a grocery store.
Right, which came from a Christmas tree farm.
Yeah, I know.
But they're like, you know...
Perfect.
Conal shape and, you know, all that, and this one wasn't like that.
No.
So it took a little creativity to decorate it up to my standard.
Yeah, and one thing that we've decided to do is we have a stand of a particular type of tree, Douglas fir, actually. And we decided, hey, you know what? We're going to thin this out and make this our own little Christmas tree farm.
Yeah.
And so we'll take, you know, let 7 or 8 of them grow in there, thin them out properly, and go ahead and prune them up and maybe get them a little bit better.
Yeah. A little bushier or something.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So, skills.
Yeah, and the other thing that I know this is totally different, but we were talking about learning how to do different skills, and we were talking about, oh, we've got that on YouTube. We do have a lot of books, and that's something that I think you and I had discussed, is that if the grid ever went down, if anything ever happened, do we have a good enough library to be able to increase our skills and be able to pass down history or pass down science or things like that to our children and grandchildren? And so don't give up on actual physical books,
right,
and just depend on Kindle or your iPad,
right,
or online stuff. Build a useful library that has how-to books, some history, maybe some theology things, in case we,
right,
we lose it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like we said before, use YouTube while
absolutely
it's here. Use cheap energy while we have it, but we may not always have cheap energy.
Right.
And we may not always have YouTube.
Correct.
You know? So these are just some things to think about to help you on that path towards self-sufficiency.
Yeah. And I am going to be learning. I have made my own soap before, but this next year, my goal is to make some lye and to utilize that along with some lard or whatever and try to make my own from scratch, rather than depending on a store for,
right,
my basic ingredients.
Right, ordering supplies and going,
yeah,
look what I did homemade.
Right, and I did that. I have that with my candles, and I did buy soy candle flakes, you know, wax flakes, and I'm going to be doing all of that. But my goal, eventual goal, is to try to be able to make my own, and eventually we'll have bees, so I,
yeah,
can use...
Well, you make lye from wood ash, correct?
Yes.
You
but
know,
I'm
that
talking...
that works well, and because we made a decision that we're going to mainly heat our home with wood.
Yes.
So 90% of what if we could do 100, we will do 100. But our goal right now is just the vast majority of the heat for our home is from wood. We have a little bit of supplemental heat from propane, but that's it.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of wood ash, and it, not only is it good for making lye, we've used it already for traction on the ice.
Yeah.
It worked great for that.
Didn't you put some on the gardens,
yep,
too?
Yeah, we use it in compost, and, you know, has a high nitrogen content. So there's a lot of uses for wood ash.
Yeah, so we're not just dumping that
some
random pile somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
It's being used. And that's part of self-sufficiency is utilizing what you have on hand. And
definitely
thinking differently.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where you get into that change in your thinking. It's also thinking differently.
Yeah.
Looking at what's going on around you is like, okay, how can I repair it? How can I make it last longer?
How can I recycle it or reuse it?
Or how can I go do without it?
Yeah. Well, that's been interesting with even our holiday decorations. First of all, we have a lot.
And we've had a lot.
For years. And so we just kind of collected over the years. I am absolutely determined I'm not buying anything for decorations this year. So Thanksgiving, I went through and figured out what craft products do we have on hand. And then created projects to do with the children from what I had on hand, and not bowing down to the pressure of commercialism and going right. out and purchasing more stuff.
Yeah, it's just little things like that. It's just like, hey, can I stay off the conveyor belt this year?
Yeah, and my goodness, we're surrounded in forest. Exactly. Like, there's greenery everywhere. There's pine cones everywhere. There's these cute little sticks that we can use. And
then there's the perfect tree that's in our dining room.
Yes, the perfect live tree. It was free. That's and right. it's really not that bad.
No.
We'll post a picture on the internet.
Sure. it's not your typical Christmas tree from a tree farm, but we like it.
Yeah. It's like an old-fashioned Christmas.
Right. Like I said, it's not Charlie Brown's Christmas.
No, not Charlie Brown.
All right, so we've talked about a lot of things towards self-sufficiency and the spectrum thereof, and kind of how one can go about maybe making some steps towards that. So yeah. We'd appreciate any feedback that you would have, any thoughts on what we've said, or maybe some decisions you've made to take that path as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you decide to do something, let us know. We'd love to hear your story.
Absolutely.
That maybe you've decided, you know what, we're getting rid of cable and the first thing we're doing is getting out of debt. That would be really awesome.
Absolutely.
So,
our scripture for today comes from Romans chapter 4, and I'm going to read verses 1 through 13. What then shall we say was gained by Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. And to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. Just as David also speaks of the blessings of the one to whom God counts righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose lawless deeds are forgiven, and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not count his sin. Is this blessing then only for the circumcised, or also for the uncircumcised? For we say that faith was counted to Abraham as righteousness. How then was it counted to him? Was it before or after he had been circumcised? It was not after, but before he was circumcised. He received the sign of circumcision as a seal of the righteousness that he had by faith while he was still uncircumcised. The purpose was to make him the father of all who believe without being circumcised, so that righteousness would be counted to them as well, and to make him the father of the circumcised, who are not merely circumcised, but who also walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had before he was circumcised. For the promise to Abraham and his offspring that he would be heir of the world did not come through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.